Before we get into today's show, I'd like to take a moment to invite you to share your thoughts and opinions on our work. If you have feedback, ideas, or suggestions regarding any part of our overall platform, we'd love to hear from you. Please don't hesitate to reach out. We're listening. Your insights help us to grow and ensure that we're making the greatest impact possible. To share your thoughts, go to insightmyanmar.org/feedback.
Welcome back. Today I am joined by Dr. Tuan Aung Shwe, who is, among other things, the NUG's representative to Australia and has been a researcher for quite a lengthy period of time. He's recently written an article for The Diplomat, From Scam Centers to Scam State, and we are going to be delving into the continued and pervasive problem of scam centers in Myanmar and the complicated relationship between those scam centers and revolutionary organizations, the Burmese military, and also the Chinese state. Before we get on to all of that, Doctor, thank you very much for joining us and for sharing your expertise and your time with us. I want to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself and give a bit of a description of your work and your political activism for the audience who might not be familiar with you.
Thank you. Thanks for giving me this chance. So, as you mentioned, that I am Tuan Aung Shwe. I'm working with National Unity Government as a resident representative to Australia. So my background is academic, researcher, and then with the practitioner in the field of the public health. And I joined the revolution in 2021 as an activist. And then I became a NUG volunteer staff representing the government in Australia.
Absolutely. So let's jump right into this. The scam centers, we've obviously been hearing a lot about them. They've been heavily in the news, I think, ever since Operation 1027. It's been something that people are aware of. But the news seems to be a little bit erratic. And lately, it seems we only get news about the scam centers when there's something that affects the international community. We saw a few months ago a Belarusian blogger, for example, was taken to the scam centers and subsequently died. This was reported on, but the problem of scam centers generally is not getting the attention now that it was getting previously. So I want to start off by asking, compared to the time before Operation 1027, would you say that the scam centers in Myanmar have become a bigger problem, or has the problem started to decline?
There is a bigger problem, and then it's gradually spread out from the epicenter at the Myanmar-China border and Myanmar-Thailand border. Now that is spreading across the country, so including the business capital of Myanmar, Yangon, Mandalay, and even the Naypyidaw. So these are the insights new regarding how these scam centers and the sales are spreading across the country. So my articles is just highlighting about the Myanmar military, and then they are how the Myanmar military dictatorship and then this kind of illegal, illicit business economy in Myanmar. So actually, the scam centers in Myanmar started as a family business on Myanmar China border in the in the northeastern part of Myanmar. And after the 1027, that scam center cells went down to Korean states. And then it's already there in Korean state, but gradually spread out in Korean, especially along the border of the Thai-Myanmar border. So according to the think tank organization based in Canberra, that think tank released a publication is called Scamland. So according to that report, scam centers in Myanmar is gradually expanding 10 times in the last 4 years. And then you may hear that the Korean National Union is now invading the scam center and trying to eradicate the scam center in their control area. But we also receive inside information that their scam cells are now moving down to the Korean states and then next to the Thai-Myanmar border area, but not in the Myawari epicenter, but to the Three Buguda area. So that is how the scam centers, they are resilient to the operation of our international reaction to the to that that kind of transmission of organized crime. The reason is why these scam centers are so much resilient to the international action is because of the protection from the Myanmar military and then the local warlords. So in my article, I highlighted that in Myanmar, we have over 70 years long armed conflict and then the resistance movement against the Myanmar military rule. So in that regard, Myanmar military used a very clear, very clever strategies that Myanmar military built a militia, military forces in the resistant control area, and then equipped them to fight against the ethnic resistant organization since 70 years long. So, for example, I highlighted Loh Sin Han, who is a local warlord in northern, northeastern part of Shan State. And then he is also the drug cartel in Myanmar. So he was a, as well as other warlords. So for example, nowadays you can see Sok Chetu, who is a leader of the Korean Boraga forces. So the similar pattern, similar history, similar approach applied by the Myanmar military. So in my articles, I clearly highlight that the Myanmar military dictatorship and then this kind of illicit business are intertwining. So Myanmar military use local militia and then the local warlord to fight against the ethnic resistant movement. And then as a different date, the Myanmar military favor this kind of warlords and the local militia for the business opportunity. All these business opportunities are illegal. Drug trade, human trafficking, now scam centers. So in my article, I clearly highlight that if the international community want to see the collapse, real collapse of the illegal business in Myanmar, there is only one way to resolve this situation. That is to remove the Myanmar military dictatorship on the soil of Myanmar. This is the only one solution for current situation.
Absolutely. And I love that you've brought up this situation around the border, because I think for a lot of people who are reading these news articles who are not familiar with Myanmar's history, and I think you do discuss it well in your article, when we see terms like Border Guard Force, BGF, there's a presumption by a lot of readers outside of Myanmar that Border Guard Forces must be some sort of extension of a national police force under the control of the central authority in Naypyidaw, but that is not the case. In fact, in your article, you point out that that this Border Guard Force system is just the latest renaming of the Gakuheji system from General Ne Win, and that this is essentially just a way that the military bribed and armed resistance groups to keep them as sort of vassals, I suppose you could say. But I do wonder whether you can give us a little bit more information about this relationship, who these border guard forces really are, because they seem to have been the ones that really started protecting these scam compounds, really started profiting from these scam compounds. And it seems every time we read articles about this problem in Myanmar, the border guard forces seem to be the organizations that first and foremost are enabling a lot of this criminality throughout the country.
Yeah, so actually the border guard forces, the current BGF, they are actually a part of the major portion of the DKP. So former DKP is known as Democratic Buddhist, the Democratic Current Buddhist Army. And then in 2010, when the Myanmar military put on the BGF agenda on the peace negotiation table, Myanmar people put pressure on the ethnic resistance forces who signed the national ceasefire agreement to form the BGF. At that time, the major component of the PKB transformed into border guard forces in Korean states and under leadership of the Myanmar military. So that is how they formed. So DKB as well is a major portion of the Korean National Union, Korean National Liberation Army. So in 1995, the Korean Buddhist, majority Buddhist Korean in Korean National Unions are split and they are from the mainstream national PNU and they form the DKB. So at the beginning, they started aligned with the Myanmar military very clearly. And then in October, the Korean border guard forces and then the remaining DKB forces declared that they are going to work with Myanmar military and support the election, so-called election. So that is a kind of the mutual agreement, give and take, between this kind of armed forces and then the Myanmar military. So that means BGF and DKB are going to support Myanmar military agenda to restore its legitimacy from the international community by so-called election. And then on the other hand, Myanmar military continue favor them for this kind of illegal business in their control area. So that is very clear give and take arrangement between Myanmar military and its militia. So similar thing happening in southern part of the Shan states, Myanmar as well. So you may be aware that the PLO, PLA, Pa'u Liberation Organization, Pa'u Liberation Army, the military wing and political wing. So that PLO, PLA is now aligned with Myanmar military and they're fighting against the resistance forces in Karen states and southern Shan states. So as a give and take between this ethnic PLO, PLA and Myanmar military is allow PLO to do any kind of business that they want to do. So very recently, United Nations Office for Drugs and Crime, UNODC, released reports, I think last week, very recently, in which Myanmar becomes a top country of the in the top of the opium production, top. So under the military Myanmar Military Council rules since 2021, in their control area, the drugs production and then the opium production is significantly increased. And then the PLO area, if you look at the map of the UNODC, the growing opium production is in the PLO area. So this is another example of how Myanmar military and its Myanmar military ally armed forces, how they work together. So that is not only the scam center, but also the other illegal business like OPM and drugs.
And this, to my understanding, of course, this type of informal agreement and mutual protection, mutual benefit in illicit industries is something that has been pervasive in Myanmar politics for decades and decades and decades. It certainly seems like the military is very interested in maintaining these criminal enterprises for their own benefit. But
yes, of course.
Of course, like where else are they going to get their money from? But then this now raises this question of the relationship that the military has to the scam centers, because, and we're definitely going to talk about cases like China, which is putting pressure, but the military initially seemed to be very much defending the scam centers quietly. But lately, we have seen a number of reports which indicate that the military have gone in, they have seized the scam centers, they have released the prisoners, they've destroyed the buildings, they've claimed that they have captured Starlink systems that are being used. So what does this tell us? Does this indicate to you that the military is genuinely attempting to shut down this illicit industry, or is this just very good propaganda?
That is a propaganda, 100%. And then Myanmar military actually is not a genuine action against the scam business. Actually, Myanmar military is hiding the witnesses, hiding the evidences of this scam business. So you may be aware that KNU seized the scam compound in Milnepan village. And then KNU invited international observer, reporters, even the Thai authority to observe what they obtained from the scam center. And then the KNU also collected the hard disk and other communication device, and then trying to explore the evidences and then the connections regarding this scam business. So, but on the other hand, Myanmar military just destroying all this evidence. So it's totally different. And then you already told me that the involvement of the Chinese government, that is a very questionable things in the involvement of the Chinese government in fighting against the scam business. So in northern Shan states, the MNDAA area, the China destroyed all these scam business. But in Korean states, we are not sure, but we see that there is a very selective approach on the scam center, not on the same degree on all scam centers in Korean states. So there is a question of why it is selective. So scam center is targeting China, targeting ASEAN, even targeting US and Australia. So according to my knowledge, Australia lost over $4 billion Australian dollar in last year due to the scam business, online scams. Australia suffered a lot. In addition, America, the USA lost over $10 billion. So that is from the scam centers in Myanmar, Laos, and Cambodia. So my question, my thinking is, why the Chinese government not able to approach all these scam centers equally, and then they try to prevent all these scam centers in equal efforts? So that is a question among the observer regarding this kind of situation. And then that's linked to the drugs business. So you are Australian, I'm Australian as well. So we know that over 80% of the methamphetamine on Australia's streets are coming from Myanmar. Mm. And then Myanmar is producing these drugs.
So that's a very interesting situation, because, I mean, it's not altogether unsurprising, but definitely, I know that the Chinese were previously very, very insistent on addressing the scam centers. I know when we interviewed Jason Tower, he was looking at this and researching this very heavily on the angle of the Chinese losses, financial losses, which he estimated to be, you know, as you say, in the billions of dollars per year, but also the fact that many of the victims, many of the people being held in the scam centers were Chinese citizens who had been illegally abducted, moved into Myanmar, and obviously illegally imprisoned and abused. And from China's perspective, that's not only a massive financial loss, but it is a very great embarrassment to them that they are not able to protect their own citizens from being trafficked and abused and tortured and murdered. So it seems then that, if I'm understanding correctly what you're saying, the strategy of the scam centers, the strategy of the criminal organizations, and by extension, the strategy of the armed organizations that protect them, is to move the scam centers physically further away from China, but also to target other countries and leave China alone. And if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, then this indicates that China doesn't seem to be particularly bothered by scam centers in general. China is only bothered by scam centers that target Chinese citizens. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, so in theory, I do think the Chinese government has a no special policy on this kind of situation. But as you know, each and every country, they focus on their national interests. So Chinese government definitely focusing on the threat to us, to them. So that is why Chinese government pay 100% attention to the scam center. That these are threatening to the Chinese people. And that is very natural. So that is why the U.S. government appointed and established the strike force, and then now the strike force is working in Thailand to protect the U.S. citizen, and they are that is directly related to the national interest of the U.S. So that is very neutral, I think.
Okay, interesting. And then I assume the narcotics trade would be very similar to that. I don't know whether this is the case, but from what you're saying, it doesn't seem unreasonable to presume that although the raw materials for methamphetamine production are coming from China, I presume that the finished methamphetamine product is not being sent back into China, because then the Chinese government would probably take much stricter action in preventing the raw materials from being sent to Myanmar in the first place. And so I want to come back to something that you mentioned a little bit earlier. You were talking about the military, the Tatmadaw, and the way that they quote unquote liberate the scam centers, as you note, involves the destruction of the facilities and therefore the destruction of evidence, because other organizations, when they go to scam centers and they liberate them, they try to take care to collect as much evidence as possible. Now, my question is, does this indicate that the military is in some way afraid of punishment or repercussion? Why would they go to the extent of destroying evidence when they've historically been able to say that the scam centers are not their responsibility? It's not something that they're involved with personally. It's done by third-party organizations. Why would they bother to destroy the evidence? What is the fear that they have?
That's if we look at the 2027 and then the consequences. So Chinese government pointing out that they have the evidence of the senior Myanmar military officials' involvement in scam center business. And because of that information, the Myanmar military took action on its senior officials, put in jail. So that's very clear that the Myanmar military is taking part in this illicit business. Very, very clear. So in current state, there is no doubt that the Myanmar military senior official is involved in this business. And then the reason why the Myanmar military destroying all this evidence in the scam center is related to their scam election. The reason is Myanmar military is now trying to restore or trying to get more legitimacy in the international space. For example, ASEAN summit, the ASEAN leaders went to Myanmar military leaders to join the summit, as well as in UN General Assembly. So Myanmar military consistently trying to get its position in UN, but the UN Credential Committee is still appointing and accepting the ambassador and His Excellency Chaw Mo Tun as a permanent representative of Myanmar. So these are the two things, and then among other wishes of the Myanmar military to get the legitimacy from the international actors. So at that sense, the scam centers and then this kind of the spreading information of Myanmar military involvement in scam business is directly attached to their plan. So that is why Myanmar military sees the some scam centers and then they're destroying all these evidence.
I mean, it's ridiculous, but let's look then at this particular issue. I mean, I'm sure we will circle back, but let's look at this, the election, the sham election or scam election, as it's being called. And your article in The Diplomat as well sort of interweaves these two things, from scam centers to scam state, the road to Myanmar's scam election. This is obviously something that we are very concerned about, but as it stands, we've already seen the military making all these preparations, denying voting rights to huge swathes of the country, saying that, well, because there is an active conflict going on, they can't participate in the election or scam election. What is going on? Why is the military making such a big fuss? Why is the military trying to hold an election in the middle of a civil war, when simultaneously we've seen Min Aung Hlaing making statements that the military will be a part of Myanmar politics as long as EAOs continue to exist?
Yeah, so your question is directly linked to the why the Myanmar military staged a coup of 1st February 2021. Mm. But the reason is previous civilian government and the leadership of Dr. Aung San Suu Kyi and President U Win Myint. So that civilian government was able to initiate a lot of legal reform in Myanmar. Although the NLD government was not able to revise or amend the 2000 constitution, but the government able to reform several laws to get the democratic foundations in Myanmar. So that experience, that situation alert the Myanmar military. So Myanmar military, because Myanmar military carefully crafted the 2008 constitution and no one can touch except Myanmar military. But within the 5 years time of the civilian government, they think that there is not enough for Myanmar military to maintain that their military supremacy by 2008 constitution. So that is why they have no choice but to speak a coup on 1st February, a few hours before the commencement of the parliament.
Mm.
So after the coup, the coup leader, Min Aung Hlaing, announced that there is the emergency situation, and then they take control under the Security and Defense Committee. And then within 2 years, the military going to hold the general election and return the power to elected government. That is their promise. But Myanmar people, no one accept the military rules, and then the civil disobedience movement is commenced 3 days after the coup, and then a nationwide protest against the Myanmar military. Then you can see the people defensive war was declared in September 2021. So because of the strong against of the people in Myanmar military not able to hold the general election within 2 years as they promised. But within that time, Myanmar military already amended the party registration law and the cybersecurity law. And then very recently, in August, Myanmar military declared the election protection law. All these laws are directly against the people well, and then the soft scrutiny on the freedom of speech and then the freedom of expressions, and then Myanmar people lost democratic rights and civil rights. So now they are now well equipped and well prepared to hold the elections, which is not an election, but that's a plan to strengthen the military supremacy in Myanmar. So that is the key main objective of the Myanmar military. So then after the election, they will change the brand, not the coup military commission, but the so-called elected government. And they will change their uniform and dress musty, and then now declare the war that they have an elected government, and then they will try to get the international legitimacy. So Myanmar situation will not be changed. And the many other observers said that that is not the solution for Myanmar, for the current situation in Myanmar.
So this is, it feels like almost a pointless question, to be completely honest, because the military do not and have never had any actual regard for law, even the laws that they themselves have written. But what is the basis here, if there even is a basis? Because the coup itself was a clear violation of the 2008 Constitution, which the military wrote for the military's own benefit when they unlawfully detained the president and replaced him with the military appointed vice president. And as you say, constitutionally, under the 2008 Constitution, which they had already violated, they would not have been permitted to maintain the state of emergency for this period of time. As you say, at the most, within 2 years, they would legally have been required to hand back power to a civilian authority and post elections, which they failed to do. They would have been required to do that by at the very latest 2023. It is now the end of 2025. What legal framework or premise or idea or concept is the military using or claiming to be using to hold these elections? Even as you note, they are holding these elections after they've artificially manipulated the legislation that even allows political parties to exist and be recognized and run for election. There doesn't seem to be any legal framework at all left in Myanmar at this point, which has not been violated, which would allow these elections to be considered lawful and which would allow these elections to be considered being held in line with established democratic principles. Does the military have any argument for this? Have any justification, or are they simply declaring that this is going to be a democratic election and everything will be fine and nobody needs to ask any questions about the legality of it?
Not at all. So military's law is, no law is their law. So please let me explain. So in 1958, the military leader, General Ne Win, and his deputy, Brigadier General Aung Chi, approached the Prime Minister, U Nu, to hand over the power to military. And they are already prepared the coup. And the Prime Minister, U Nu, legally transfer the power, hand over the power to Myanmar military as a form the caretaker government, and then with the promise of holding the general election within 2 years. So Myanmar military accepted the agreement. So it's not, actually that was an informal coup, but in Myanmar history, it's not a coup.
Yeah.
Then Myanmar military, as they promised, they hold the general election in 1960. Then 2 years after, the Myanmar military staged a coup.
Yeah.
So that is how they lied to the people of Myanmar, first line. And second line is that in 1962 military coup, the General Ne Win promised the country that they're going to build socialism in Myanmar, and then the fairness, and then the equal opportunity, a lot of good things he thought. But in reality, for 10 years under the Myanmar military revolutionary council rules, then we see the 1974 constitution. One party rule, no space, no room for the civil rights and democracy, just military rules by constitution. And then that is the second line to Myanmar, people of Myanmar. And then this line is very famous as a Burmese way of socialism. Not true socialism, that is Burmese way. Burmese way, Burmese military way of socialism.
Mm.
And then in 1988, the Myanmar military staged a coup again. And then at the time, they promised to the people that they're going to establish a multi-party democratic system, and then they're going to hold election in 1990, 2 years after the coup. And then they did it. And then the Aung San Suu Kyi led National League for Democracy won with a landslide victory. Then they didn't transfer the power to the NLD, and then to hold the power for another 26 years. And then at that time, they carefully crafted the 2008 constitution. That is start lying to Myanmar people. So that is why this Myanmar Spring Revolution, you may aware that the Myanmar people say that there's no more negotiation, no more dialogue, just to eliminate the Myanmar military dictatorship forever from the side of Myanmar. So that is why the Myanmar people say no more dialogue, no more negotiation, because Myanmar military lied to people again and again and again. So no one believes in Myanmar military today.
Mm.
So similarly, this election is just so-called election. So that is why many people said that sham election, scam election, fake election, so many names. But in reality, it's not lawful. It's just a systemic attempt to strengthen the military supremacy in Myanmar. So I would like to make a reference with our well-known Australian military analyst, the professor, he's working with the Griffith University, Andrew Sells. So he did a research on the Myanmar military mindset, and was published 2 to 3 years ago. So in his paper, he clearly mentioned that Myanmar military mindset is not belief in democracy, not belief in federalism, just believe in themselves, and then they have a trauma of the. They repeatedly stated that the Yangon government. So after independence of Myanmar, the internal armed conflict born with the independence, and then at that time, the central government was able to manage only Yangon. So at that time, the international community said this is called Yangon government. So Myanmar military remind itself that we built the country from the Yangon government to today. So Myanmar military believe in that they need to hold the power. Power must be inherent in Myanmar military. And then they never believe in civilian politics, they never believe in will of the ethnic minority. Federalism, they think that there is a way to split the country. So that is their, how they believe in their mindset and then their doctrine. So that is why Myanmar military trying to hold the power at all time, all time. So I also like to reference to the Dr. He wrote about the peace building initiative in the last 70 years. Sorry, I'm not able to recall his name. He's very famous. He's famous about Myanmar. So in his book, he clearly mentioned that Myanmar military just attempt to get the ceasefire and then to get their better position in the frontier areas. So never reach to the systematic root causes of the internal armed conflict. So, you know, over 70 years long, Myanmar civil war, the root causes are federalism, resource sharing, ethnic minority rights, civil rights, and then equality, self-determination, self-administration. These things are the root cause. But in the last 70 years, Myanmar military just trying to get the ceasefire and then take this position to build their military strength in the frontier area. Never touch the root causes. So that is why Myanmar never get the true peace or positive peace. We were in the negative peace, just ceasefire and then fight again, ceasefire for a while, and then erupted the armed conflict again. So we are embedded in the vicious cycle of the negative peace for over 77 decades. So that is why, please do not expect if Myanmar military calls peace agenda after so-called election in next year, it can never bring a sustainable peace. But on the other hand, the current Myanmar Spring Revolution, although there are so many weaknesses in the revolution among the actors, but they have a significant achievement in peace agenda. So I just wanted to highlight that part one of the Federal Democracy Charter, so which is in which there is a common agreement on the basic principle for building new Federal Democratic Union of Myanmar. So in last 10 years, under the Thein regime and then the NLD government era, international communities, including the Australian government, provided a lot of support for peace building in Myanmar. But this peace building never reached to that level, which is mentioned in the Federal Democracy Charter. So you may ask me, why the previous six or seven time national peace conference not able to provide this kind of outcome, but Myanmar Spring Revolution actors able to provide the basic principle for the basic principle for building the new Federal Democratic Union within the 2 months after the coup? I want to say that yes, we can commit it, because there is no military representative in the room. So my answer is, when the military representative in the room for the peace building, no one can achieve peace. Myanmar military is the main obstacle for building peace in Myanmar.
And I'm very glad that you're saying this explicitly and clearly, because there is a very disturbing trend among international commentators in all conflicts, whether it's the Myanmar conflict, whether it's the Russia-Ukraine conflict. But in all conflicts, there seems to be a desire for equivocation, a desire to say that, well, you know, both sides have to be respected, both sides have to maintain their positions and they have to be given concessions, and that a truly stable, peaceful resolution is a resolution that is a compromise. And I think you've laid out a very strong case here for why it is not going to be possible to compromise with the military, or why any attempt to come to a peace deal with the military or a negotiation with the military will fail. Because I think, as you've pointed out very, very fairly and very clearly here, everything in Myanmar's political history going back to 1960 has been an attempt to compromise with the military and give the military what they're asking for, including the 1974 constitution, the 2008 constitution, the 1990 elections, 2010 elections. Everything has been an attempt to compromise with the military, and yet the military have staged a series of coups, 1962, as you say, 1988, 2021. So I think it is very good and very healthy and very useful that we are able to explicitly argue that no, the military is the problem, and a compromise solution with the military is not going to be a solution at all. But on that, I do wonder. I know you can't predict the future. I know you can't necessarily tell me what the strategy will be. But what would be the idea if we are able to bring the military to the point where they capitulate? What is the plan? Would the Myanmar military, the Tamador as it exists, be disbanded? Would it be replaced with a completely new armed force? Would national defense be distributed to the various stakeholders in a federal system? What would be the strategy for preventing Myanmar from ever becoming a victim of a military dictatorship again?
Thank you so much for asking this question, which is very important. So, regarding our Myanmar Spring Revolutions, NUG and our allied forces, our top priority of the revolution is security sector reform. So in that security sector reform, we clearly mentioned that Myanmar military must not be in politics. So Myanmar military as an institution should be a professional entity and work professionally and not in the politics. So that is the overall aims of the security sector reform. The second thing is military institutions are essential for each and every country. Myanmar needs us well. But we do need a new institution with new attitudes, new mandate, and a new doctrine. So as I mentioned before, according to the professor Andrew Self mentioned that the current Myanmar military institution is very corrupted, and then their mindset is totally against with the will of the people. The people want Federal Democratic Union since the independent struggles, at the time of the independent struggle in the late 1940s. So you may be aware that the Pinlong Agreement. So Pinlong Agreement that signed by General Aung San, who represent the Burma proper, and then other ethnic leaders who represented the frontier area. So at that time, the British ruled Myanmar in two parts, the Burma proper and frontier. So the Pinlong Agreement is a signing agreement to build the Federal Democratic Union in future, signed by leaders of the two components of the Burma or Myanmar. So, I mean, young people in Myanmar, their dream is to build the Federal Democratic Union. So that's agenda already set before the leaders as the independence from British. But that dream didn't come true until now. So that is why our security reform agenda, we do need a new military institution with new mindset, new doctrine, and then a new mandate with the professional standard. Because current Myanmar military institution is not a military institution. It is just a war crimes leaders and then the corrupted leaders and criminal gang, not military institutions. So in our Federal Democracy Charter, it's clearly mentioned that we're going to establish a federal army for Myanmar. So in that sense, we have a special program. It's called the People Embrace Program. So welcoming Myanmar military personnel to join our struggles and then depart from the Myanmar military current online and criminals and join with the people. So we have several approaches and also other related programs for formation of the federal army in Myanmar. So that is why you can see we carefully build our people defense forces in terms of their attitudes, in terms of their rules of engagement, in terms of code of conduct. We are building them with professional standards, respecting to the Geneva Convention, respecting to the international humanitarian laws, respecting to the people world and the values on democracy and federalism, which are totally opposite to the current military regime and Myanmar.
And I think it is such a good an important point to keep getting across that the NUG has considered these questions and the Federal Democracy Charter does exist and the roadmap to a federal democratic Myanmar does exist and that these questions have been raised and they have been considered and that there are answers to them and the elimination of the military is something that is, or the elimination of the military as it currently exists, I should say, is something that can be achieved in Myanmar, that should be achieved in Myanmar, and is not going to result in any sort of immediate national collapse. I know that military propaganda in Myanmar for decades and decades and decades has rested on this idea that it is the Thatmadaw itself which created Myanmar, which protected Myanmar from dissolution and balkanization, which, you know, prevented rebel groups from destabilizing the nation. But as you have said, I think very correctly, all of these problems, all of these crises that the military claims that they resolved were actually caused by the military in the first place. It is their suppression of ethnic and religious minorities that has created the ethnic armed organizations. It is their farce of a ceasefire system. We talk about the national ceasefire, but the national ceasefire was just a tool the military used to temporarily stop fighting in one area so they could concentrate their soldiers in another area to maintain a permanent state of conflict and warfare, while pretending to be fighting for ceasefires and peace and stability and negotiations. So I'm very glad that we have the opportunity here with a representative of the NUG to point out that solutions do exist, a plan does exist, a future for Myanmar has already been designed, and the transition can be accomplished with relatively little pain once the military has been removed from its position. Unfortunately, though, we do also have to take into consideration that there are other states that are not keen to see Myanmar progress. Do you feel that these elections are going to be respected by other nations within Myanmar's community and sphere? Or do you think there is hope to convince the international community that these elections are completely baseless and fraudulent and should not be taken as an excuse to recognize the military as a legitimate government and should not be taken as an excuse by organizations, for example, the United Nations, where, as you pointed out, Jo Mortun is still the representative of Myanmar, even though the military have been trying for years to have him replaced with a pro-military delegation. Do you feel that we are able to prevent the military from using these elections as an excuse to make themselves the only internationally recognized government and representative of Myanmar?
Yes. So I like to say that a handful of the countries are engaging with Myanmar military, even in this situation. And then this country is going to engage with Myanmar military after the so-called elections. And they may recognize the so-called elected government or military government. So I don't think so the position will be changed. And then the other like-minded countries which believe in democracy, human rights, and then supporting the Myanmar people well and standing together with people of Myanmar, the countries were not going to legitimize the Myanmar military. So the situation won't be changed. But the legitimacy battle in United Nations and then ASEAN and other regional blocs, that may be significant for people of Myanmar and NUGs, because you know the Myanmar military has receiving a strong backup from the very powerful countries, including the U.S. Secretary Security Council. So, and then they have a veto power. So these are the things we need to look at and then be prepared very well to maintain our legitimacy and defense our legitimacy in very near future. But the many countries, including the countries which backing up the Myanmar military, think that Myanmar military is only one institution in Myanmar able to stabilize the country. But I would like to say no, that thinking is really old, not valid now. Because Myanmar military stronghold areas in terms of recruitment for the officer level and then the other rank level, Myanmar military rely on the central plain region of the Myanmar, the Burma majority area. But today, these areas are now very stronghold of our national unity government and fighting against the Myanmar military. So previously, Myanmar military has a recruitment area, a very strong recruitment area. We have a recruitment plan. And then the central plain region people living in the central plain regions joined the Myanmar military. With this manpower, Myanmar military was able to contain the ethnic minority revolutionary forces and contain the resistance movement in the Bora area. But nowadays, Myanmar military lost its recruitment area. You can see that the Defense Service Academy, very popular institution among the Myanmar young generation. So many young Burmese people, they apply DSA every year, and then the DSA receive over 20,000 applications each year. But today, the DSA receiving a few hundred. So that is the future of the Myanmar military. The Myanmar military is like a dead tree. So for the moment, some major power, they can help Myanmar military to revive from these struggles with modern equipment, modern digital surveillance equipment to scrutinize the Myanmar military, to strengthen the repression. But long term, Myanmar military will be lost because it's like a dead tree. There is no more recruitment. Even though Myanmar military surviving with the forced recruitment, forced conscriptions, but it's not a solution in long term. It's not a solution in long term. So people in Myanmar are on same page that Myanmar military treated all these people who are against them the same treatment, the killing, rape, banning down the properties, the same treatment to ethnic minorities, including Rohingya people. And nowadays, Burmese majority in Central Plain region, they're bombing every day, killing and rape the young women, killing children and elders. So the same treatment. So people in Myanmar are on the same page that Myanmar military is a common enemy. And then they have no source for the recruitment. So their future is dead. So that is the thing that the country who backing up Myanmar military need to know. So they are providing support, assistance to the Myanmar military based on their national interests. But if they aware on this long-term situation, their investment will be negative impact on them. Myanmar people, they always remember who back up the Myanmar military.
Absolutely. And I think at this point, it's helpful for us to sort of circle all the way back. We started this conversation focused on a comparatively narrow, although a very widespread problem, which is these scam centers. And as we investigate the scam centers and we see that the cause of the scam centers, the cause of this problem in Myanmar is the military. And as we look further, we find that the cause of essentially the entire ongoing conflict and also the cause of the instability in Myanmar for the last 70 years is fundamentally the military. But what I want to do is to make sure that we are doing the utmost we can to raise awareness around these scam centers and to make sure that people are thinking about them and are trying to find solutions to them. What I would like to understand from you is, how are the scam centers as an industry, how are they changing and evolving, and what is the military likely to do? As we've discussed, they are trying to distance themselves from the scam centers. They're trying to destroy the evidence. They're trying to, you know, look legitimate in front of the international community for these upcoming sham elections. But once the elections are held, do you anticipate that this is all going to stop, that the scam centers will receive full support from the military once again, and that the scam centers will continue to evolve and will continue to target more and more countries and find newer and more innovative ways to extract money from victims? Or is it likely that in order to maintain this pretense of legitimacy, the military will continue at least some level of operations against the scam centers?
Yeah, I'm very happy to say that Myanmar peoples are now very happy for getting the attention from the international communities on these scam centers. And then they have a very strong willingness to cooperate with international action to fight against the scam centers. So previously, the scam centers are contained by local warlords with support of the Myanmar military. But nowadays, everybody knows that. And then the international community, including US, have a plan to fight against the scam center. So I can definitely say that people in Myanmar will fully cooperate with these operations. So there is no way or no space to hide for this criminals. So people in Myanmar, they will cooperate, and then there is no way for escape.
Excellent to know. And we hope that resiliency is going to develop and that ultimately the scam centers can be squeezed out of existence. As we know, the scam centers are terrible places where many, many victims have been internationally trafficked. But one element of this that I haven't raised with you yet is that although these scam centers are effectively prison camps, a phenomenon that I've heard from contacts in journalism within Myanmar, and also that I've heard from some of the guests that we've been able to discuss this with on this podcast, is that out of desperation, because there are no opportunities in Myanmar, more and more Myanmar people are choosing to go to these scam centers and work there. People know what these scam centers are. They understand that these are illegal enterprises, and they understand that the payment is bad and the treatment is worse, but they are desperate and they are choosing to go to these scam centers and offer their work. Is this something that you think is going to continue? Do you think that because there are no other opportunities, because the country has been at war for the last 5 years, that more and more Myanmar people are going to find themselves forcibly going into criminal enterprises, whether it's the drug trade, whether it's the scam centers or any other type of illicit economy? Is it likely that people will increasingly find themselves forced into these sectors? Or do you think that the people themselves are going to try to reject this and find alternatives and find solutions so that they don't have to contribute to these industries?
Yeah, there may be fights of destination for some people because of the collapse of the economy in Myanmar, as well as the threat of the force constrictions. So many young Myanmar people may consider there may be a good earning for them in the very difficult, very hard to find a job, as well as the escape from the force constrictions. But there is a small portion of the workforce in the scam industry. So scam industry running with the forced labor and then like a slavery type of the workers. So, but now we can see that the international response is increasing to fight against the scam center and aware of the situation more and more. So I don't think so the scam center will have a further resilient to stay survive in Myanmar. But I like to highlight that there is not only one approach to fight against the scam center. There may be coordinated approaches required. For example, international criminal court need to consider seriously on the duty to accuse and then release a warrant to the Myanmar military war criminals, as well as the standard cooperation between the neighboring country and then the international law enforcement organizations to fight against the scam business. But I can definitely say that the people in Myanmar, they fully cooperate with this operation.
Hopefully we will see this. And in sort of moving to conclude our episode, obviously you are the representative of the NUG here in Australia, where both of us live. And as you have pointed out, Australia itself is very much a victim of the things that are happening in Myanmar, which may officially be done by local crime organizations. They may be supported by local armed organizations, border guard forces, what have you, but they ultimately exist as a result of the circumstances that the military has created, and they continue to operate as a result of the protection that the military gives them, directly or indirectly. And this includes billions of dollars lost as a result of these scam operations. It includes inordinate quantities of methamphetamine, which have come to Australia. And for those who are not in Australia, methamphetamine use is quite high, and it is a very concerning problem. I would say in virtually all capital cities of Australia, you will see very visible evidence of methamphetamine abuse. I've seen it in every major city that I've been to in this country, and I would say, if anything, it is an increasing problem. And as a result of that, I simply want to give you the floor here to tell our audience what it is that they can be doing, whether we're talking to a civilian audience, whether we're talking to a governmental audience, whether we're talking to a civil society audience. What are the things that can be done and that need to be done in order to combat the military, in order to combat the scam centers, in order to combat the sham election, and any hope of international legitimacy for the military as a result of that? What is it that people should be doing?
Yeah, so I just want to say that for the politicians and then the senior government officials, the regional security, peace and security is the utmost agenda for them. And then the Myanmar situation today is directly impacted on the regional peace and security. And Australian government fighting against the drugs problems as well as the scam, online scam threats. And then to win over these battles is directly linked to Myanmar people win over the military dictatorship. If Myanmar people able to eradicate the Myanmar military dictatorship from the soil of Myanmar and then able to establish the genuine Federal Republic Union and build sustainable peace in Myanmar, that is the benefits not only for the people of Myanmar, but also for the people in the region and beyond, including Australia. So I'm very happy that the Australian government statements a few days ago that strongly the government and people of Australia strongly stand together with people of Myanmar. So in that sense, we do need more support and the international support as well as cooperation for the Myanmar people struggles to build the genuine Federal Democratic Union and restore peace and democracy in the poor country.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Insight Myanmar Podcast. The stories and conversations we share are meant to inform, inspire, and deepen our understanding of the rich tapestry of experiences that can be found in Myanmar. And as you might imagine, producing this podcast requires a great deal of time, effort, and resources. So if you've gained some value from what you've just heard, we ask you to consider paying it forward. Your support can continue to ensure that we're able to produce and share more episodes like the one you just heard. Every donation directly fuels our ability to reach out to a more diverse range of guests, record their powerful stories, and bring them to life for listeners around the world. So by contributing, you're not just supporting this podcast, you're also creating opportunities for others to benefit from and hearing these conversations down the road. So if you believe in the work we're doing and want to see it continue, please visit insightmyanmar.org/donation. Together, let's keep this conversation going.
Yaran angka yau nyana dadu ya dalam biar di ganesa di mana wika dah biasa ya nak biasa ya. Hoba yaran anda dah yaran angka na yaran ayat dah yaran ampor dah yaran.